have the audiobook review, and this month it's Right O Jeeves by P.G. Woodhouse. Please note the excerpt in this item are read by Rob Pearman and are not the original audio as supplied by Calibre, as we were not granted permission by the publisher. If you would like to listen to this audiobook, Calibre will be happy to supply. Simply ring 01296 432 339. That's 01296 432 339. Sir Pelham Grenfell Woodhouse, commonly known as P.G. Woodhouse, was born on the 15th of October 1881. He was an English novelist, short story writer, lyricist, playwright, and best known as the creator of Jeeves, the supreme gentleman's gentleman. He wrote more than 90 books and 20 film scripts and collaborated on more than 30 plays and musical comedies. He had a scholar's command of the English sentence, and he delighted in vivid, far-fetched imagery and slang. His plots are highly complicated and carefully planned. Whatever the dates of the publication of his books, Woodhouse's English social atmosphere is of the late Edwardian era. Right O Jeeves was written in 1934 and stands as one of the most celebrated entries in the Jeeves and Wooster series, widely praised for its intricate plotting, comic timing and distinctive narrative voice. Debbie and I are back in the studio, and this month we have a rather delightful book, haven't we?
Yes.
We've been listening to P.G. Woodhouse's Right O Jeeves. And you can't really not say it like that. I just want to say Right O Jeeves.
You can't.
Yeah, and I just have to say, as an audiobook, I think it works so well.
Brilliantly.
Because you've got to hear the dialogue. The dialogue's so fantastic. Mm. And done with the right narrator. I really, really enjoyed it. So, yeah, it's a real, real fun one to listen to. If you need cheering up.
Yes.
And you want to have a little giggle.
And escapism as well. It's set in the past, obviously, in that golden era.
Yes.
Although he carried on writing them well into the
1970s. I think the last Jeeves and Wooster was 1971. So, yeah, prolific.
He did start writing them in the 20s.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And they are frozen in that era.
Yeah.
Most of the communication seems to happen by telegram.
Yes. And now this is really interesting, isn't it? Because it's just like our text messages, isn't
I
it?
I thought that too, yeah.
And when I was growing up, I don't know when telegram stopped, but I would imagine around 1980, because I don't remember them ever being a thing. I loved the telegram sections. They were so funny.
It was like modern day texting.
Yeah.
And the way it's kind of read in the book, it sounds like they're coming quite fast.
Yeah.
Certainly between Bertie and his Aunt Dahlia. Yes, I think this would be a good point to pause and listen to the audiobook, and we'll have an example of what we're talking about.
The first of the telegrams arrived shortly after noon, and Jeeves brought it in with the before luncheon snifter. It was from my Aunt Dahlia, operating from Market Snodsbury, a small town of sorts, a mile or two along the main road as you leave her country seat. It ran as follows. Come at once, Travers. When I say it puzzled me like the Dickens, I'm understating it, if anything. As mysterious a communication, I considered, as was ever flashed over the wires. I studied it in a profound reverie for the best part of two dry martinis and a dividend. I read it backwards. I read it forwards. As a matter of fact, I have a sort of recollection of even smelling it, but it still baffled me. Consider the facts, I mean. It was only a few hours since this aunt and I had parted after being in constant association for nearly 2 months. And yet here she was, with my farewell kiss still lingering on her cheek, so to speak, pleading for another reunion. Bertram Wooster is not accustomed to this gluttonous appetite for his society. Ask anyone who knows me and they'll tell you that after 2 months of my company, what the normal person feels is that that will about do for the present. Indeed, I've known people who couldn't stick it out for more than a few days. Before sitting down to the well-cooked, therefore, I sent this reply. Perplexed. Explain. Bertie. To this I received an answer during the after-luncheon sleep. What on earth is there to be perplexed about? Ass, come at once, Travers. three cigarettes and a couple of turns about the room, and I had my response ready. How do you mean, come at once? Regards, Bertie. I append the comeback. I mean, come at once, you maddening half-wit. What did you think I meant? Come at once, or expect an aunt's curse first post tomorrow. Love, Travers. I then dispatched the following message, wishing to get everything quite clear. When you say come, do you mean come to Brinkley Court? And when you say at once, do you mean at once? Fogged, at a loss. All the best, Bertie. I sent this one off on my way to the Drones, where I spent a restful afternoon throwing cards into a top hat with some of the better element. Returning in the evening hush, I found the answer waiting for me.
That was very interesting. And as you say, it's frozen in a certain era, and Jeeves and Wooster never age, do they? They're always the same, and it's always the same era, and there's the same sort of like scenarios. Mm. It's sort of timeless in that way.
Yes.
So that it was great fun. I mean, we could have so many quotes.
So many. It's going to be difficult, isn't it?
Very difficult to choose certain quotes to play to you. You could probably play the whole book and well, I don't think we'd get away with it.
Although most Jeeves and Wooster stories are very similar, you know what you're getting. The broad story of this one is that Bertie, who has a collection of aunts, is summoned to stay with his Aunt Dahlia, who I believe is his favourite aunt. That is how it has always come up in the books. And she makes various demands on Bertie to sort out lots of domestic problems within her house party. But what she really wants isn't Bertie. It's the brain of his manservant, Jeeves. And I'm going to start sticking up for Bertie here. I don't think Jeeves is as clever as he thinks he is. I think sometimes Bertie's ideas are just as good. And most of Jeeves's end up with Bertie falling in a lake or ending up being almost married to someone inappropriate or shelling out an awful lot of cash.
As you say, there's always reprisals for what Bertie does, and it usually ends up with him being in some sort of indisposed in some way. I think in this particular novel, I think Bertie is trying to dispense of Jeeves's services, and he keeps insisting, I can do this, I can sort these problems out, we don't need Jeeves. And that's, he keeps saying, Jeeves is a bit off, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Jeeves has lost his he's lost his superpowers, and so Bertie takes it onto himself to deal with several sort of relationship problems.
Yeah. Well, there's Gussie Finknottle, Tuppy Glossop.
Incredible
it's a host
names.
Of them, right? So Bingo Little isn't in this one, nor is Catsmeat Potter Purbright, but you get them mentioned.
I'm glad you said
and Barmy Fungi Phipps is also not in it, but it's just nice having them referred to, isn't it?
I mean, extraordinary names. Yeah, so Bertie takes it on himself to sort out various relationship problems between different friends and their girlfriends. And obviously, with trying to make it better, obviously makes things worse and ends up almost betrothed.
Yes, he has a narrow escape marrying someone he doesn't particularly want.
And it's a big caper throughout, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I have to say this, the scene that really, really made me laugh out loud was, and we can obviously have a clip from this, was when Gussie is at the school.
Oh, good, because that's my favourite bit too. Yeah. So poor Gussie is a very shy, retiring young
newt
man.
Fancier.
He's a newt fancier. He lives somewhere in Lincolnshire.
By himself, yes.
And he was, he had a very exciting event a few weeks before this story happens, when a young lady was walking her dog in the area. He got a thorn in his paw and Gussie took it out, and he fell in love with this girl, Madeline Bassett.
Mm.
And Madeline features heavily in this story. So Bertie is summoned by Aunt Dahlia to Totley Towers because she wants him to do a speech at the local boys' grammar school for speech night, you see, and Bertie doesn't want to do it.
Yes.
So he sends Gussie Finknottle instead. So Gussie Finknottle ends up doing this, but Gussie, as I said before, is a shy and retiring chap. And
teetotal, apparently.
And teetotal. And he's a bit scared to be doing this speech. So Jeeves and Wooster separately decide it would be a good idea to lace his orange juice.
Yes, with vodka.
Yeah.
Yes, although little known to them, Gussie has already partaken in a large flask of
whiskey. A lot of whiskey.
Yes.
So he is completely pie-eyed by the time he starts doing this. And he's got some kind of hang-up about He and Bertie were at Eton together, and during this school career, Bertie received the Scripture Knowledge Prize, and Gussie feels hard done by. He feels that he stole it from his hands.
Obviously, he thought that Bertie had cheated.
Yes, this comes up a lot in the speech, and he therefore directs a fair amount of aggression towards the young man who has won the prize, G.G. Simmons.
Yes, he's a little chap that's sort of waiting to get his prize, and Gussie has got a very sort of drunken anecdote that nobody understands apart from Bertie. But it's hilarious, right, the description of Gussie at that point, who was obviously, you say, pie-eyed and slurring and completely out of control. Yeah, and one of the many, many funny scenes. And here's a great example of the comedy of P.G. Woodhouse.
G.G. Simmons was an unpleasant, perky-looking stripling, mostly front teeth and spectacles. But I gave him a big hand. We scripture knowledge sharks stick together. Gussie, I was sorry to see, didn't like him. There was in his manner, as he regarded G.G. Simmons, none of the chumminess which had marked it during his interview with P.K. Purvis, or, in a somewhat lesser degree, with R.V. Smethurst. He was cold and distant. "Well, G.G. Simmons." "Sir, yes, sir." "What do you mean, sir, yes, sir? Dashed silly thing to say. So you've won the Scripture Knowledge Prize, have you?" "Sir, yes, sir." "Yes," said Gussie, "you look just the sort of little tick who would. And yet," he said, pausing and eyeing the child keenly, "how are we to know that this has all been open and above board? Let me test you, G.G. Simmons. What was, what's his name, the chap who begat Thingamy? Can you answer me that, Simmons?" "Sir, no, sir." Gussie turned to the bearded bloke. "Fishy," he said, "very fishy. This boy appears to be totally lacking in scripture knowledge." The bearded bloke passed a hand across his forehead. I can assure you, Mr. Finknottle, that every care was taken to ensure a correct marking, and that Simmons outdistanced his competitors by a wide margin." "Well, if you say so," said Gussie doubtfully. "All right, G.G. Simmons, take your prize."
"Sir, thank you, sir. But let me tell you that there's nothing to stick on side about in winning a prize for scripture knowledge. Bertie Wooster..." I don't know when I've had a nastier shock. I'd been going on the assumption that now they've stopped him making his speech, Gussie's fangs had been drawn, as you might say. To duck my head down and resume my edging towards the door was with me the work of a moment. "Bertie Wooster won the Scripture Knowledge Prize at a kid's school we were at together, and you know what he's like. But, of course, Bertie frankly cheated. He succeeded in scrounging that Scripture Knowledge trophy over the heads of better men by means of some of the rawest and most brazen swindling methods ever witnessed, even at a school where such things were common. If that man's pockets, as he entered the examination room, were not stuffed to bursting point with lists of the kings of Judah..." I heard no more. A moment later, I was out in God's air, fumbling with a fevered foot at the self-starter of the old car.
But if readers want to stick with the whole Jeeves and Wooster thing, there are three interesting characters. One of them, my personal favourite, is Stiffy Bing, who is a very headstrong young woman. And then you've got Honoria Glossop and Florence Cray, who are young battle axes, you know, so he mixes it up a bit.
Yes, yeah.
And at various points, I think Bertie is engaged to all of them.
I think you have to forgive, because it's obviously...
Of its time.
And I think you have to sort of, what do I say, temper your expectations. The characters don't develop. They are who they are.
Yeah.
More or less in the same sort of area, and it won't...
Yes, you know, but it is tightly plotted.
Oh, yes.
It's a very... It's a bit like an episode of Fawlty Towers.
Yes.
It's been so well plotted for all those comic ups and downs.
Yeah.
And it's very, very funny. But I think... one of the reasons it's so successful is because they are character comedies.
Yeah.
Yes, some of those characters are archetypes, but they are very well drawn archetypes.
Yes.
You feel very fond of most of these characters.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, Bertie is a...
You have to love Bertie.
He's adorable.
Yeah.
He's an adorable buffoon. And, you know, to a certain degree, we all like to sort of poke fun at the idle rich, don't we? And so it works in that sense. Yeah, I mean, the characters are who they are, and I don't think you could expect anything else.
So one thing I love about P.G. Wodehouse's novels is it's a shared universe, a bit like a Marvel universe, if you like, that they're all members of the Jones Club, and they're all mentioned in each other's stories. So even if it's, what's the other character? Smith, isn't it? Spelled P-S-M. So they're all members of the Jones Club, and I really like that.
Yeah.
I think that's marvellous.
It ties everything together, yeah. And it is a universe, isn't it? I mean, and people who like Wodehouse love him. And they are fanatics. And there's a P.G. Wodehouse society, absolutely adored by people. And I can see why. It's kind of England of a certain era. It's nostalgic. It's not offensive in any way. It's silly, but funny silly, not stupid silly, if you know what I mean.
I agree.
There's a distinction there, I think. And I think you can all get on board and giggle along with them.
Yeah,
It's
children
totally,
through to people of any age, really.
Yeah. I just have to mention the language
because
it's so beautifully written.
It's rich, isn't it?
Absolutely a delight because it's so well pitched and it's perfect, really, in terms of what he's trying to achieve. I really enjoyed the language.
So I'm wondering if this language and this environment he's created is partly escapism for himself, sort of nostalgia.
I think he must have been part of that society to understand it so well.
I would have thought
He's Pelham Granville Wodehouse, so that's
known as Plum.
Yes. Oh, right. Mm. OK. We'll take a break here and listen to the audiobook. Here's an excerpt.
Two true Jeeves. At any rate, for the last 5 years, he's been living at this place of his down in Lincolnshire. As confirmed a species-shunning hermit as ever put fresh water in the tank every second day and refused to see a soul. That's why I was so amazed when you told me he'd suddenly risen to the surface like this. I still can't believe it. I'm inclined to think that there must be some mistake, and that this bird who's been calling here is some different variety of Thinknottle. The chap I know wears horn-rimmed spectacles and has a face like a fish. How does that check up with your data? The gentleman who came to the flat wore horn-rimmed spectacles, sir. And looked like something on a slab. Possibly there was a certain suggestion of the piscine, sir. Oh, then it must be Gussie, I suppose.
Fabulous. I think our three reasons are going to be three very positive reasons. And it's such a relief after last month's book.
Oh, dear me, yes.
We needed some light relief, I think, and this certainly provided it. So, Debbie, what do you think, the three reasons?
It's really hard to narrow it down. I mean, ultimately, it's comic joy.
Yeah.
It's quite short. It was, what, no more than 6 hours?
6 hours, six and a half, something like that.
Am I going to go for characters or escapism? I think I'm going for the characters and the names of the characters.
Yeah.
I just think it's marvellous.
Yeah.
What about you?
Same. I think I wasn't expecting to laugh so much. And I think as an audiobook, as I said at the beginning, I think it works so well and better than a lot we've listened to. It just lends itself to being spoken out loud. So I love it for that. And if you get the right narrator, it really, really comes alive. I love the characters, the scenarios, and trying to work out the plot and what was going to happen. I kind of thought, how are they going to get out of this one? This is such a fix. How are they going to get out? And obviously Jeeves does stuff. Well, works his magic at most points. But it does get pretty hairy for Bertie at some points. And it's that I really liked him. I could dismiss him as a bumbling fool, but he's actually very sweet and actually very loyal to his friends.
Yes, I mean, thinking particularly about that bike ride at the end.
Yes, and he generally wants to help. He doesn't always succeed in that, but he generally wants to help. And he's a lovely sort of hero to have in a book. As you say, it's absolute pure joy. It's great fun to listen to. I can't think of a single reason why you wouldn't want to. Thank you so much, Debbie. It was so lovely to have a very positive review to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Such a pleasure. Such a pleasure. It was lovely. I haven't read A Jeeves and Worcester for a number of years, and it was just great to get back into it.
Brilliant. Thank you.